to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the Blue Balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the Blue Balls. The Blue Balls.
Nueve.
Blue Balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Like. Little bits that come off in your mouth when you suck too hard on your Nalgene water bottle. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckhardt, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I'm joined this week by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week? Do you ever have this problem where the mouthpiece of one of your suction-based water bottles, and I'm not a big water bottle person, I wish I was, starts coming apart or like molting, I guess is the word that I'm looking for, in your mouth?
Yeah, that's, I had one of those beat up guys.
What is the solution? How do you? I mean, it feels because the
you buy
aluminum
a metal
is still,
water bottle. Yeah.
No, this is a metal water bottle. It's the pipe. It's
ew.
the mouthpiece
fuck?
That's coming apart. I know it's disgusting. It's not great.
Are you Jaws from James Bond?
No, I'm James Jaws
Bond.
From.
You know those movies, James Bond?
Yeah, that's right. James Bond, James Bond 2, James Bond 3, James Bond's Revenge. James Bond 4, Jaws, the musical. Yeah,
my name is Bond. Bond James. This mm-hmm. is stupid, but
nah,
hey,
it's pretty
we're back.
Bad. Trey, I am broadcasting currently. We are back after a week absence. I am broadcasting currently from the lobby downstairs below my play, which is running through Saturday. If anybody wants to skip the game and come to a play about improv, I don't recommend it. But hey, who am I to tell you how to spend your time? In fact, some of you already elected to spend your time this way because, Trey, I shit you not, three fans of the podcast are in the audience as we speak right now.
Oh my God, no way.
Finally, this fucking thing has paid off, and my notoriety and my religious separation of my my directing career and my podcasting career have it's all fallen apart, and people who are well, okay, so it turns out this is so yeah, shouts to Zane, shouts to Elaine, shouts to Orly. Great to see you guys. Hope you didn't hate the play. These three, Zane is partnered with somebody that I directed pre-pandemic at Atlantic, and like apparently like figured out just like by inference. Zane was already a listener and was like, oh, that Jake is this Jake, and oh my God. And I got this information like an hour ago from Christina, the partner, via email. So in short, I'm psyched. And I hope you
That's
guys
cool as fuck.
Had a nice time with my stupid improv play.
Well, if people are listening the day this comes out, they could see it Friday night.
That's true. That is true. Except for I think it's sold out. It might even
oh,
be like
look
the,
at you,
even the
big
premiere
shot.
Tickets might be. It's the last weekend. Everybody's showing up because they have to get the box checked. You know what I mean? Everybody has to see and be seen once when their friends do something, and they all waited until the last minute. Not you though, Trey. You came last week. What'd you think?
I loved it. Great fun. Nostalgic black pill. Was very triggering in all the right ways.
Good.
I had a good time, and you are good at your job, and. We should promote your shit more on the podcast.
No, we definitely shouldn't. It's absolutely...
No, we shouldn't. No,
I'm
we shouldn't.
100% uninterested in it. I'm only doing it right now because already people have shown up. And so I don't want to, you know, I want to acknowledge their contribution to the lore.
The Venn diagram is measurable, but not huge.
There's a another crazy thing that happened, which is that somebody who I went to college with, who I love very much, who does not listen to the podcast... Sam, a friend of mine who I studied with, I haven't seen in years. And she was like, oh, Mike said to say hi. And I was like, Mike who? And she was like, Mike Pilger. And
no.
I was, uh-huh, who she's been dating for 3.5 years.
Crazy.
People, the world, the East Coast liberal elite intelligentsia is too small.
it is. Welcome back, listeners. We missed you. Obviously, Jake has
That's
been
why we're
extremely
trying to drive
busy.
You away as hard as possible with all of this absolutely
know, with
useless
inside
information.
Talk. Jake's been extremely busy putting this play up. I've been extremely busy with enormous depression out of nowhere.
Hell yeah. Hell
keep
yeah.
my hands full. And NYCFC was off, so we were like, fuck it. You yep. know what? Let's take a little time away.
We chilled, and we enjoyed it, friends. Let me tell you. We put our feet up and confronted our various depressions and anxieties, and we are no better for it. We are still as arrested in our development as the day you met us. But the same can be said about NYCFC, and there's our segue, baby.
Hey, we did it.
Let's talk about the Minnesota match. Trey, are you as black-pilled about this NYCFC side as everybody else is, and as you are about your own youth coming out of my play about improv?
I'm more like wet fart-pilled. I guess it is that's the worst pill you could get. They call it fish oil. But we know. I think everything is just kind of happening. It just feels like, okay, let's start off this podcast with a little bang. I did have a nice little chat with listener of the pod, Brad Sims. And, you know, he just was like, after that match, he was like, dude, how can everything go wrong for us? Like, this, it's just the ball doesn't bounce our way. I mean, the statistic everyone's been pointing out, well, that obviously, of course, Paul pointed out, because that's what he does, is like, you know, Bakrar's shot was the highest expected goal miss of the weekend, and Gray Gush's goal was the lowest expected goal make of the weekend. Like, we're just so fucking snake bit. We finally get a penalty call, which has not at all happened this whole season. And it goes against, and it turns out, you know, they called us for the flop, and Julian Fernandez was fined. Like, but it feels like all of that. So thanks, Brad, for that, you know, rapid reaction. But on top, but that is only the frosting on the cake that is this team's lack of being clinical. I mean, it's always that. It is always something happening in the brain of our players when they reach the final third that keeps them from making the right decision. And I don't know what to do. I don't
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, this team has remained solid. But it sucks. Like, the Red Bull game, you make one defensive mistake and it's game over. Like, game over. The second that fucking penalty happened, game over. We were never coming back. This match, you make one fucking defensive mistake, game over. And it doesn't matter how well you play if you can't fucking put the ball in the net. But how often can we say this over and over and over again?
Yeah.
That's the main fucking takeaway of this team, is like, it doesn't matter how well you play if you don't win, I guess. I'm being blackpilled. That's it. We've gotten there.
Yep, that's right.
Me,
finally.
Mister, we played well despite the result. I've flipped.
Yes,
we
you're all,
play
you're
well,
you're all
of course, but it doesn't fucking matter because we're not winning.
It is on some level still interesting to see us play well in new and interesting ways and still lose, right? I mean, I think,
well,
like,
that's true. I didn't want to talk forever.
But, you know, that gives the question that our three listeners in the lobby had for us was, are we donezo, right? Do you hang up the towel? Is there nothing really more to see except for to, like, wait patiently and, I guess, see if there, like, there's a natural development to the newly acquisition talent? Or are there more specific things that you're looking out for here that, you know, whether or not they convert the season, are still, like, signifiers of the season being used intentionally? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think there are definite things to build off of and good things to see, and it's good that the team's playing well, as you said, in new and interesting ways. It really comes down to, are these good things that will get us into the playoffs, or are these just good things to go into 2024 with?
Mm-hmm.
And that we're going to find out probably in the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Right? Because this Minnesota game, perhaps our toughest home match, one of our tougher home matches of the seven games we have at home after the break, but one that we, you know, was really important to try to get a result out of. Not just a win, but even a draw would have at least kept something moving forward, because we're going into perhaps the hardest game of the stretch, which is Cincinnati away. And that's not a game, not to jump ahead, but that's not a game we should expect a result from. So it really becomes like, can you at least in the Cincinnati game build on some of the good things that we saw? So what are some of the good things that we saw? Well, the new guys, right?
Yeah.
The new players.
The first person who jumps to mind, of course, is Moncef Bakrar, who I think is...
Okay.
Oh, that's my opinion. If you have a different order,
listen, let's go.
I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise here. You know, I don't want to sit back. I'm rested, Trey. You know, I'm springy. I'm off my heels right now. I'm on top of this shit. I'm not at all. But I do want to talk about Bakrar, because I think that he's just an obvious place to go for a glimmer of hope in terms of a lust for goal. And a speed and an intelligence, it feels like, that is punching through the noise and the boredom of what this side has been thus far. What's your read on him?
Yeah, well, you look at the results. You know, he fits right into this team because he's playing well and the results are not there. six shots with one goal in 232 minutes. Obviously was worked into the squad. Obviously he played the first two games with limited practice. I think in this match he did do a lot of the good things we saw in Toronto. He's taking the top off the defense. He's making them honest. It's creating space for Keaton Parks to move up, for Maxi Morales to do his stuff, and for the half spaces to open up in the box. Like, these things are happening. We had 19 shots or whatever. That's good, and that's improvement. The other thing I was really impressed with was his first touch. Not something that really necessarily jumped out in his scouting videos or on the scouting report, but there were two or three moments in this match where it's like, oh, he has the second best touch on this team behind Talish Magno. Like, his ability to bring down a ball, like, that's so promising. That big, huge chance he fucking missed in the first half. That first touch, we have not had a striker. Obviously, we had Tati Castellanos, but I don't know if there's any other player that has had that ability to bring the ball down like that in a dangerous area on a run on in full sprint. Like, those little things for young strikers, and he is young, are promising.
Yeah.
Of course, he fucking whiffed it after that, and that's the thing he needs to work on.
But we know
he can finish.
I think that that is the thing to that to me divides. We've talked a lot about this team's youth, you know, in the last year and a half. We've talked a lot about I think in our most optimistic spaces, we see people sort of rising up into the players that they can be. And I don't know about you, but for me, aside from just simple finishing skill and comfort, the thing that most signals maturity in a player is touch, right? Like, it's not... putting a heavy touch on a ball that you're in control of is being able to bring down a ball. And I think that's one of the reasons why I found this so heartening, is because whenever you see somebody trap a ball like that, it makes you feel like you're watching professional soccer, which unfortunately you're not always feeling that watching an MLS side struggling to get results.
That's a great point. Yeah, it gets a little nerve-wracking when Nick Cushing says things like, yeah, we really are resting our laurels on Bakrar's finishing, and it's like, well...
What finishing?
Uh-oh, I don't think we should rest anything on any one player. That's not really how a team should be built. The other thing I wanted to dive into was, obviously, I think Maxi Morales is perhaps the biggest takeaway of the game. He comes in...
Yeah.
We don't know anything about how he's going to play, how he's going to fit in, how fit he is. You know, Cushing says he's more fit now than he was 8 months ago. And he comes and he plays. And he's more fit than he was 8 months ago. And he's all over the place. And he's playing defense. And he's got a drive to win that we miss on this team. But more specifically, he is the conductor. He is the person guiding the offense completely. And that interior pressure, that forward momentum through the midfield when we have numbers, it has been something desperately lacking. You know, we'll probably touch on the Women's World Cup if we have time. We have so much to talk about. But one of my favorite, Andre Carlisle, of course, great, fantastic commentator in the women's soccer space, coined a term for the women, for the U.S. women's team, that their tactics were was the prayer circle offense, where there would just be a few people in the box and then people on the sides. There's no space, no one between the midfield and the box. Like everyone was holding hands in a prayer circle, and that's something that has been appearing in the, when Santi got the ball in the midfield, when Keaton's had the ball deep in the midfield, like the inability to have an outlet, leading to what everyone complains about, the side passing, the backwards passing, that becomes more evident when you're losing. That's something that Maxi's presence just cuts in half, those moments of discombobulation. And most excitingly, and I don't know if it's exciting because it's usually we've used it as kind of a desperation offense. And by we, I mean Maxi, is the return of trademark Blue Balls, Point Maxi, the point, the point god. He was back in this match when we were losing. It's like, it's such like a safety blanket that does feel good when Maxi has the ball somewhere in the half space, near midfield, and he lets all the other midfielders go in front of him. He lets all the other wingbacks and defensive backs go in front of him so that there's people to at least pick out. He understands moments in the game where he knows we don't have anything cooking. There is no flow. We need to slow it down. We need to start fucking, you know, really analyze where we are. And he just sits with the ball at half field, and the opposing team just lets him do it because they don't respect his passing range. And that's when you get opportunities like the Bakrar chance in the first half, but also many other times. The return of Point Maxi was back. And it was nice to have a familiar tactical wrinkle that we were missing, frankly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in all ways, it felt like a relief having Maxi back. You've delved straight into the tactics, but I think that the vibes are just as obvious. It was startling and delightful even to see. And because there's this just like this oh thank heaven from the fan base on this, you know, away home game, it also felt like Maxi's work was like accelerated by that. Maybe it's just that he looks better in this like less experienced side, but it's also like this is the homecoming, you know? And so everything that Maxi did, he did near flawlessly, right? There wasn't the sort of like scrambling or the desperation or the like heavy pressure that we saw with other versions of Maxi over the course of this team. It was Maxi as veteran, Maxi as peacekeeper. It was the best Maxi you can ask for. Which makes it all the more frustrating that like all of that good service and all of that good like tempo and control could not have been turned into goals. Even in set pieces, I was like, this is a more confident Maxi Morales, right, than the guy who we've all come to expect cannot make a set piece happen for the life of him.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point with like the emotional boon, obviously, like even just the moment where we thought we had a penalty and he was going to give it to Talis Magno, like that's like, hell yeah, bro, that's good. And I think he really did. He was just kind of just felt comfortable being back. And that's a huge thing. And also teams are, you know, forget that the only way to beat Maxi is to like drape themselves over him. And so they let him have plenty of space, and I hope that keeps happening. I have a question for you. What do you think about our favorite boy, Glup Shido, a.k.a. Berk Risa?
I was not unimpressed, but mostly I was confused about the start over Chanel. Right? Like, this is the sort of secret play of the evening. Was this a gambit? Was it a fact-finding mission, or is there just something, or is there once again, right, something tweaked, something small, some reason to keep Chanel off the field?
Who knows? You know, the guy who's been our captain for like 2 months nearly was just instantly benched for a brand new player. I'm not sure. I was going to bring that up as well, and I'm glad you did. That should not take away from Berk Risa's abilities. Obviously, there wasn't much defending to do necessarily in this match, but everyone's already said this, but his, you know, cross field passing, his diagonal long balls, his ability to stretch from that position is a brand new skill we have not had on this team. You know, Alex Callens didn't necessarily do that. He was more a formational space taking presence than a passing presence. And
yeah,
that's cool, and I like that because
distribution so many from teams, the center is really. It feels like it's been really rare on this side.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to break your thought, but that is true in a very salient point, and maybe like portends a shift in strategy here that was more interesting to start with Burke Risa than it was with Chanot.
No, but I think it's important because you look at MLS teams, and like there is a tendency sometimes to overcommit to certain sides of the field because they're so scared of being cut through the middle by whatever DP the other team has. So they will just stack bodies on one side of the field and overcommit, and they don't allow for space. I mean, MLS is a very physical league because they play very congested soccer, and there's a lot of turnovers and things like that. So when you think back to, like, Brian Kufre against Charlotte, he was on an island because they were overcommitting to the opposite side of the field. Well, when you have someone like Burke Risa, he can take advantage of those MLS defenses when they do that. And it's something to look forward to. I don't necessarily appreciate what Nick Cushing is doing to a club legend like Maxime Chanot. Mm-hmm. I think that is, you know, people have these weird esoteric criticisms of Nick Cushing, like, oh, he's only won one game in 20. Oh, blah, blah. You know, I care about the real hard things.
Uh-huh.
Those are where my real criticisms sit.
Is he honoring the captain? Is he honoring Chanot exactly. The way that Chanot honors God?
Yes, exactly. What else? I don't know. I don't want to harp too much. I feel like there's just so much. You know what I do find interesting? The one good thing about bringing an influx of new players is obviously like increased competition, but also after the match, like one thing I've been at first, I thought it was good and then realized it was very, very bad is like the locker room being so laissez-faire about losing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At first I thought it was like a good sign of youth, like this idea of memory of a goldfish. Like, you know, they're not outwardly depressed and like they're going to tough it out so they can win the next match. But now it's starting to become later on like, oh, do you guys actually care about losing? And having these new guys here, like, they were devastated. Devastated. Bakrar refused to talk to anyone. He turned down every interview. Burke Risa was, like, slumped in a chair like he was shot. And as some other guys, like, barely wanted to talk either. Like, Julian was obviously depressed. Alonso got out of there ASAP. Like, it does kind of, there is at least something to injecting new blood. These are people that want to win.
Yes.
You know, they don't want to come to a new team and be like, well, guess what, guys? This is a young team and we have good play, but the results just aren't there yet. Like, they don't feel that way.
No.
They're not part of that side of the culture. They want to fucking win now. So, I'm convinced, you know, part of the pitch for all of them is like, you can help us make the playoffs and be a fucking hero. So when those things don't happen, like, at least taking losses hard is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And you know, these are people coming from like winning teams. These are people coming from who understand that they are here to rescue the season. And so I think that they're going like that. They're taking that responsibility seriously. Portends good things, or at least portends like watchable soccer. Thank goodness. I buy it when they say like, no, we're playing for the playoffs, right? We're playing to rescue this, like this side's chances. And that they will also all feel like something was that they failed, like despite coming in late, if they don't accomplish that goal.
We didn't see too much of Julian Fernandez, but we did see some. I want to get your general thought quickly. Yeah, you don't have to be quick, but I just have a bigger picture thing with him.
I want to hear the bigger picture thing. I think, you know, that subs, particularly subs, like of brand new players, it adds something. It adds a little bit of a chaos element, but it didn't do anything to take control of the game. Not really. And that, like you've said, there's no, the impact is, the only thing that matters is goals. That's the only thing that matters anymore. I don't think Julian Fernandez got us any closer to, or like that getting subbed in the 61st got us any closer to getting those goals. But like, good on him for getting minutes.
Okay, here's my take. And I've never been the most successful gambler in my life. I do okay. But I am in on Julian Fernandez. I got my chips in.
Was it the overturned penalty? Do you think he's gonna that he can draw fouls better than other people?
No, and it's not the fact that he whiffed a fucking open net as well because he can't use his weak foot. Look, I've taken these things into consideration, but this is a gut feeling thing. This is something this is the perpetual stew that's in my stomach. Is like, ew. He is some fucking chopped up potatoes in there, and he's fucking, I'm throwing them in. Because this is the deal. Like, I've been reading a lot of Zito Madu because he's got a new book coming out, and I was like, do I want to buy it? I don't know. I don't know him, but he seems like a smart guy. So I was reading through a lot of his old stuff, and, you know, there's something he always harped on that I always just kind of wash over me. This idea of, like, you can't talk about art in soccer anymore. Like, it just doesn't have a place at the table. It's all about analytics, which, you know, of course, we're at fault for partly. And it's always about win or lose or who should get fired or who should get traded or who should get signed is obviously a huge part of the conversation now. But the one thing that I've been missing entirely and completely is like this idea, and it didn't sink in, this point he's making, until I saw Julian, because he scratched a fucking itch that really like got me. Like, the quality of his play, the quality of how he runs, of how he touches, of how he makes runs, of how he passes, it is so small, but there's this muscle memory of seeing any players like him that just scratches that itch for me. That, like, where you just know. It's like if you eat a fucking, if someone gives you a sample at Costco and you take a bite and you're like, this is my shit, I don't need a whole fucking bag to know that I like this. And I think, I'm not saying, like, I think he's going to be the best player ever. I just know instinctually from this, like, you know, 20, 30 year, you know, chewing of this perpetual stew, that I know I'm going to like this player. Even based on 5 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever. And like, I like that I had that reaction to him. It's reactionary. It might not be accurate. He might be a fucking blowout. He might suck. He might not play beautifully ever again, but for some reason he just scratches that itch for me. I just wanted to share that. I feel like we should talk more about the instinctual artistry of the game more. It's dying out.
Yes, most definitely.
I'm on that team again.
What is it? Can you get more? What do you? Because I feel like the last person that you had this reaction to, and this was, I think, a lot more ballyhooed because this is a player coming from just like a much higher profile situation, was Talish Magno.
Didn't work out in that one. I still love
that. It feels like it comes. It's just like the way that certain players use their feet, like the way they dance on it, right? Like the Jogo Bonito, like energy and philosophy is something that you can see in the toes from go, and that not everybody comes at this in this league with.
It's just like identifying uniqueness in players. Like, it doesn't have to, players don't have to be compared to each other. They don't have to, like, everyone is unique and they all have the things they have. Like, I was a big fan of Jan Koller, who was the 6'6" Czech striker, not because of a Jogo Bonito or anything like that. It's because, like, I liked his big head shining when a player was running up the pitch on the right side of the field. Like, he always was in the middle there, and I fucking love the fact that he was like a groundhog where you always knew he was gonna fucking be there and get his big ass head on the fucking end of a ball. Like, there's a uniqueness of the quality of movement that I appreciate about certain players. And I think that's what I like about Talish, and I think that's what I like about Julian. So when I say Julian Fernandez is the future of this club, I frankly just mean I'm going to like watching him play. Mm-hmm. Whether he's good or whether we win or not, I just know that. And I want to talk like more about players in that way in the future. There's those qualities. Like, Tavon Gray is not necessarily the best player on the planet. but there's a quality he has when he plays that at least is like interesting to watch. And like, what else are we doing? We're watching to be interested.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's also the thing that makes people fans of the league and not of a side, right? Like, I think a lot about, you know, how do you trick people into caring about MLS? And I'm right in the middle. So I promised my friend, whose play I'm doing, that I would get into basketball this year, which is not something that I just wasn't raised with it. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're tapped in, most definitely.
I got my wife into it.
Oh, it's hell yeah. Doable. All right. I believe it. It seems like the most doable, I would even argue, right? Because its elegance is great, because the characters are great. And like, it seems obvious, I was talking to Adam, my co-director on this thing, and he was saying, you know, like the young kids don't even, like they're kind of fans of sides, or of sides, they're kind of fans of teams, but like really they're fans of the league, right? They're fans of players, and the players are all over the league, and they like, you know, it's easy to be fans of the league. 100%
accurate, 100%.
And, I think that's a really hard one to crack in soccer, because some of the best play is invisible until you invest serious time into noticing it, right? Into how to notice it. You have to learn how to read it. It's a little like there's an inaccessibility to it. If you're born in it, of course, right? You understand what's going on. But if you're trying to learn it, it's just not where the action is necessarily. Everybody loves a finisher, but like, yeah, that I think there's more to do to highlight just beautiful play, and I think that you've been doing more of just simply being a voting member of the Soccer Journos Association.
Yeah,
so we'll
shout
do
out
that work. We'll put some. What were we gonna say?
Shout out friend of the pod John Mueller, who wrote for the article. It might be a series, or it might just be one about how to watch soccer. He wrote a great article before the Women's World Cup.
Speaking of which, should we jump into some talking points? Is there anything else that you want to get into on this?
Is there anything else? No, we lost. Boo, it sucks. Boo. And who cares about the last goal? Bad. Who cares? They scored on us. It's whatever. Garbage time goal. Who cares?
Fine. Ha, who cares? Love it. Talking points time.
Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points. Talking points.
That was the Talking Points theme song. He doesn't even need a break anymore. He doesn't go looking for it. And these are the Talking Points. Trey, let's talk about the Women's World Cup. Let's get into it. Spain, champions. U.S. crashed out in exactly, kind of, I mean, the least surprising form that we possibly could have said. Was there much ballyhoo about the U.S.'s performance like coming into this cup? Yes, but if you were listening to anybody, particularly if you were listening to Trey Fillmore of Blue Balls Pod, you could have known that the cohesion was not there. There were no signs that it was going to be there, and that there were enough hindrances to the great success of this team that like going out in the knockout round that early shouldn't really have come to as a surprise to anybody. But was it a surprise to you, Trey? And how did you process your grief?
I'm still processing it. I'm disgusted. I'm like absolutely disgusted by, I guess, the result, not by the players themselves, but by the result. And I'm disgusted by, I mean, a real wave washing over me finally as a denizen of the internet. Like, man, this shit sucks, dog. Like, I'm glad we've built communities for NYCFC, at least to certain extents, where you can find people and have engaging conversations that you want to have. There are people that want to have certain conversations. They found their people. There are people that want to have certain conversations. They found theirs. There are people that listen to only us. There are people that listen to us and City Boys and New York City Forever and Blue City and all of them. You know, like, I love that about our fan base. The problem with World Cup soccer is that it becomes a national storyline. Mm-hmm. And there's just an ignorance of honoring the people who do the work of analyzing and digesting and narrativizing the play and the players and the coaching for years on a daily basis. Like, it's a real shame that those people don't get the recognition they deserve, and that there's a lack of understanding when a majority of people, including myself, just want people to understand. Like, I want people to appreciate what Trinity Rodman can do. And it sucks when, because of how she's utilized on this team and how, you know, things didn't bounce her way, that this idea of her as a player, it becomes misinformed. And that's just an example. And frankly, I don't even think that's the biggest example, but I'm still digesting it. I think it's something that's sitting with me. I don't think I've fully gone through. It might take me 4 years to kind of get over this World Cup. Because it is, at the end of the day, as a fan, it was extremely disappointing, of course. Perhaps even more so because that last game was the best they performed, the U.S. women. It was against the number three team in the world, and we fucking dog-walked them, but we couldn't put a ball in the back of the net, if that sounds familiar. I think it becomes extremely more interesting when you have Lindsay Horan named captain of the team, which was shocking enough to begin with. That's not against her. It's just, you know, considering some of the players on the team. That she came out this week and said, like, no, that last game we just kind of did our own thing and didn't listen to the coach. And they ended up playing super well. I think that's very telling. You know, I just think that there's a lack of understanding and contextual knowledge when it comes to it, which is fine. Like, you don't have to watch women's soccer all the time. I get it. It's a lot. It's a big commitment. If you're listening to an NYCFC
adding another
podcast,
league. Yeah, for
I
sure.
I don't think you, I understand if you don't have that, and that's fine. But it becomes like people who want to think they're experts or people in, even like, you know, people that are paid to talk about women's soccer who clearly just don't want to do the work of reading or acknowledging or digesting what people who have watched every day have to say or observe. Like, that becomes very dispiriting. And frankly, my main takeaway from this World Cup is like legacies and performances that are just have been tarnished based on a few bad games, you know? And it's, look, the U.S. women's national team, this idea of them being bad, even just the general idea of like they were awful or they were bad or they crashed out of the World Cup is laughable if you watched any of the games, because they were the better team by far, head and shoulders. They were the best team in the World Cup. They just couldn't win. And that sucks, but it happens. Greece was not the best team in Europe in 2004, but they put that shit together and they won. And they would tell you they were not the best team in Europe, but they won, and good for them, and they deserved it, and Spain deserves it. But that shouldn't diminish like the quality of talent the U.S. team has. This idea of the rest of the world caught up to us. I'm sorry. Sweden got dog walked by us, and they're the third team in the world. So this idea is preposterous. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's really insulting to the talent that this team has. There was a bad coaching, and frankly, like, some of it lands on the players to not necessarily understand the power that they have and exercise some of these options that they have. I just want to, like, it's important that people understand that, like, Megan Rapinoe is a legend of this sport. She's one of the best women's soccer players ever. She's won 2 World Cup trophies. She won a golden ball and a golden boot. She's one of the fucking silkiest wingers that has ever lived. And is it her fucking fault that the coach subbed her in, even though she's old as hell and had a bad tournament? No, that's not her fault. Mm-hmm. She tried her best and it didn't work out. You're going to knock her. And this minutia of like, why'd she laugh after she kicked a pen? Who the fuck cares? Yeah, what the fuck are we doing? She's won 2 World Cups for this country. She can laugh after missing a PK if she wants to. You fucking weirdos. I thought this was about soccer.
You know how it is. It really, like,
that's why there's no opposition. About,
right? Like, yes, for sure. There's not enough people pushing back and saying, like, that shit does not matter. And particularly on something like this. Particularly when the sport is always struggling for, parity. Right? Like, it can be really frustrating to see things that undermine that or undermine the seriousness with which the game can be analyzed. But it is, I think, on a certain level, part and parcel with the scale and also with the, like, I guess with being the best, or like thinking of yourselves as the best and with high expectations. It's not, there's not pluck in the way that the women's team is analyzed. It's the they've spent the last 20 years making the correct argument that they should be seen as like global leaders in soccer, regardless of gender, and now they are. And so there is a, I think, desire, which you see in other top tier, like around other top tier squads, to really lay into anything that could be a sign of like why there was an underperformance. And I think that you can certainly make an argument that it's just garden variety sexism, that, you know, Vlatko is not getting the brunt of the blame for these performances.
Yeah, and he is a huge part of the blame. I think U.S. soccer is a huge part of the blame. I think their lack of acknowledgement, like if you follow some of these well-versed women's soccer writers, they would tell you from fucking the Olympics, since the Olympics, like Vlatko's inability to change what he's doing. It's the same fucking team and the same system that he had back then. And his inability to change, to call up new players, like, was shocking. His inability to, and it's like, oh, he threw a bone to Sav DeMello. You mean the Sav DeMello he never called up before, that he was only forced to call up because she was the best player in NWSL at the time of the World Cup? Like, maybe she was going to have a bad game if she's never played with this team ever before. It's just like those decisions are the reasons they lost. I mean, it's 100%. I don't want to dwell too much on it. You know, if you see me at a bar and want to talk to me about Carly Lloyd and Alexi Lawless, I'd be more than happy to talk about it.
Yeah, you can get another 30 minutes on that alone, I'm sure.
It's just like, you know, people don't talk about how many Super Bowls Tom Brady lost now. You know, they only talk about the ones he won.
Sure.
And for good reason.
And the same is likely to be true.
Yeah, I hope players like Becky Sauerbrunn and a super, you know, Becky Sauerbrunn and Megan Rapinoe, and the ones that weren't here for one reason or another that won't be in the next World Cup most likely, like a Kristen Press, like a Tobin Heath, like a even Julie Ertz, like what the fuck she did was insane and amazing, and she gets all the credit in the world for what she did. I think it's not all fucking doom and gloom. I think that
no.
There's
the
so much
is so
youth
obviously
talent
there. Yeah, 100%. I don't think anybody is making that point. Do you know?
I listen. Bill Simmons is the number one sports podcast on the planet, and he's saying the USA doesn't have, because he doesn't know what he's talking about, and it sucks that those opinions flood the brainwaves
Bill Simmons
of the
never
American
knows what he's
sporting
talking
public.
About.
No, well
with
that's
the, with the women's team, anyways.
And yet I listen twice a week every week. Who knows?
Adam just dropped off some Korean food for me and is trying to unbox it extremely slowly so as not to rustle anybody's jimmies. So I'm going to let him do it, but pivot you to talk about the rest of the tournament briefly. So I know you've been basically monologuing up until this point, but keep going, Trey. Tell us what we can take away from the state of the sport internationally from what happened after the U.S. women's team dropped out.
Sure. And the period on that sentence is Nick Cushing should be the next U.S. women's national team coach.
Yeah, obviously. Easy. Clear choice.
Easy. I'm super impressed by Spain. I love it. The most beautiful thing is this whole ship blowing up in their face. How fucking poetic is it that this team, that essentially half the team boycotted the Euros because of how fucking awful they were treated and harassed and abused. And if you have any questions about that, go ahead and look up the Spain sit out or the Spain strike or whatever. Google what you have to do to understand what the Spanish women have gone through as a federation before this World Cup. Just an awful federation on how they treat their women players. And the fact that they won despite of that is something I did not anticipate. I think that like France was like a smaller kind of microcosm of that, which is why I thought that they would win the whole thing, was that they had so much talent and they had an awful coach last World Cup. But now that they fixed that, they were going to be successful. But Spain just had kind of this energy and vigor and clear determination of how they wanted to play that it just shone through. Their talent allowed them to carry that through to the final, and that was beautiful to see. I think they're deserving. I think it's good that they won. I think, you know, if England won, you would say the same thing outside of the Federation. I think a lot of it played out how we thought. I think the Australia kind of overperforming expectations on right. their home soil was a beautiful story. I'm super impressed. Obviously, Linda Caicedo was on the minds of everyone entering this tournament, and she came out really high. I think Salma really, really overperformed and is the biggest star coming out of this World Cup, and I'm excited to see what she does. But just, of course, like the biggest story after, unfortunately, it's not that the Spanish women overcame their own federation mm-hmm. to win the World Cup for all the talent that they've spent, I mean, decades accumulating through those big clubs in Barcelona and Real Madrid and the other heavy hitters in Spain actually taking time to dedicate resources to their women's teams. It showed. And you have to give them kudos. But, of course, it all gets overshadowed by the men, by yep. of the fucking leader like of the it's so fucking like perfect that motherfucker had to sexually like fuck up some woman on national television, on international television, and it cost him his job, and it's allowed the world to understand and see the issues that were plaguing this team for months and months and months and months. So unironically, like it's almost poetic that they won. And because they won, the freak kissed the player, Jenny Hermoso, God bless her, and that exposed everything. It's just a perfect microcosm. And frankly, this awful, weird, fraught World Cup could not have ended a better way, to be honest.
than with someone just like telling on themselves publicly and then getting punished for it. In a yep. weird way, it is encouraging. And I don't mean to be like this guy, you know what I mean? The sort of like, oh, well, you know, thank God we live in America where we have the freedom to talk about this stuff. But like, it is encouraging, you know, thank God that we are in a moment where when these things happen, it would be nicer to be in a moment where these things didn't happen. But instead, we are in a moment where when these things happen, there is a swift blowback, right? There is a clear understanding of the inappropriateness of what happened. And no one is ambiguous about it. And the apology is issued. And then like, I don't know, life goes on and it becomes more possible maybe to get back to celebrating the soccer and like the things that these players accomplished, which are significant.
Yes, well put. Just going to put a bullet that everyone that complains about the women getting equal pay and quote unquote stealing money from the men for this World Cup performance that they didn't win.
Lol.
Can suck my fucking dick, because a lot of these women were literally sexually assaulted by coaches that were in the league or assaulted in other ways, verbally or physically punished for years and years. And U.S. soccer, via a governmental and an independent and league-wide investigation, both were determined at fault for covering up this abuse purposefully. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. those people have not really suffered that many consequences. So no, you can suck not. My dick. If you feel bad about the women getting paid, eat my whole entire ass, because it's nice those being, problems still live.
Unambiguous about this stuff. I think we've said this sort of thing so many times that there's no longer a drop in the listener count the week following whenever you
No, because this team is fucking awful that no one's listening this season.
That's right. Why would they? Why would they spend any more time thinking about this team than they have to?
I'm not even going to say how low our listeners are this season, but well, you can tell when the team is bad, people don't want to listen to the podcast.
Well, we're glad you're here, dear listener. Let's give them five more minutes, Trey. Let's get into Cincinnati. The question on everyone's lips, how can we snatch a draw from this most unfavorable of matchups?
Well, lucky you, I was just on Cincy Soccer Talk a mere hours ago as a guest, and was an interesting peek. I love when I'm on another podcast or I'm talking to a fan of another team and they like complain, and it's like, no dude, you don't understand. We've won one game in 20 like in 19 or 20, like I think you guys
you and I
okay.
are different. It's a different vibe.
But they they are in a weird headspace because they've lost like three in a row or something, and some of them have been super dramatic, obviously Messi, which we haven't even talked about, but we can.
No, Jesus.
Because that's been my entire life over the last 3 weeks is just watching Messi play.
The fans who came are asked about that, and they're going to be sorely disappointed because no, we're not going to get into it. But there's of course tons to tons, and we don't have time for it today.
It's amazing. But they've lost in dramatic ways recently. They've had some outgoing transfers. They didn't make any transfer changes necessarily. But at the end of the day, you know, we saw them dominating Inter Miami 2-0 and until they choked. This is a team that is number one in the East for a reason. They are at least suitable from head to toe. They have some weak spots. Their defense is not necessarily a shutout defense, but they have Lucho Costa. They have a really solid midfield and midfield depth. I love their depth everywhere. Like, Pat Noonan has done a good job just getting like grizzled MLS vets that are willing to throw their bodies everywhere. We're lucky because I believe Noam Bodo is on yellow card accumulation suspension. I hope. I think so. And that would be at least a saving grace for us. Obviously they played 120 minutes and it was hot, but their three best players were subbed out early in that match. They'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And these are professional soccer players. I think they'll handle it. They'll be at home, which is like a really hard stadium to play in. Obviously we have a chance cause our defense is sturdy and they have at least in recent form kind of found some difficulties building chemistry up front. Scoring goals is another thing. But Brandon Vasquez can, you know, slot them in. He beat us in the U.S. Open Cup with a goal. I can see it happening very similar to the last time we saw them when they played at Yankee Stadium, where that's when Gabe Siegel got called for a foul on the phantom foul that really turned that whole game around, and mm-hmm. we lost to them 3-1. Mm-hmm. Just like a fucking, you know, another shit cherry on the shit sandwich of the season. But I can see something similar happening. I don't know. I don't feel entirely too solid. I hope the more Maxi has a ball in this match, the better it is, because we want to have possession against them.
Yeah.
That's when good things happen. That's what you saw Inter Miami do. The second they calmed the game down and didn't let Cincinnati kind of overrun them and were confident in possession, there's at least a chance, here.
And, you know, it's a team, not again to, like, bring it back to vibes, but it's a team that often, that in many cases has, they don't crumble when they're playing somebody, significantly stronger than them. Because this is a possession-based team that then makes slip-ups and then loses, you know, 1-0 or 2-0 or whatever, mm-hmm. rather than, a team who can't get it together. There's a lot clicking. It's just not delivering. And so in some ways, it's actually not that bad of a matchup in the sense that, like, the task in front of us is one that we can handle, particularly with the people that we have lined up for it right now.
Yeah,
but it has to be consistent, and it has to be, like, throughout the entire match, and that's the part that I'm worried about, right?
Yeah.
Like, it has to be sustained, and I don't know that we are in a position to sustain it.
I completely agree. I would say a draw on the road against the number one team in the East when you're hunting for a playoff spot is solid.
Yeah.
That is good. And we would absolutely take that. Of all the games we need to win, this one was not necessarily on the list. Now, with the loss, of course, the fucking loss to Minnesota, this game becomes a little more pressured, but mm-hmm. I think you should look at it in a vacuum and understand, like, we're almost meeting them at the best point we can. This is the most emotionally and form-wise down that they've been all year. And if there's ever a moment to take advantage of that, it's now. The problem is we can't fucking win on the road or at all. So, you know, that sounds like a draw or loss to me.
What would you, if it is a draw, how would you call it?
1-1.
Mm,
and if it's a loss, a 2-1 them. I think Bakar needs opening to get one in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's get him back on the score sheet.
I feel that too. Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckard, and we both tweet at Blue Balls Pod.
Blue Balls Pod, baby.
You know it. You love it. The merch is out. If you're one of the 5 listeners we still have this season and you don't have any merch, are you crazy? The summer's almost over. You got to get this tank top on. You got second summer's coming around the corner. September. You can wear it out to the beach after all the kiddos have gone back to school. Or you can drop a dollar
Labor
in the
Day
jar
weekend.
At cash.me/$blueballs. Or just search Blue Balls in your Cash app. It's so, so easy. Thanks for listening. We're so glad to be back, finally, to be staring down the loaded shotgun that we are inches from pulling the trigger of with our toes, waiting for this season to end.
Dark.
Let's see what happens if we get Kurt Cobain. Who knows? Thanks, and we'll see you next week and find out. Bye!
Bye. Very fast postscript. New Jersey, cop or drop, Jake?
Cop.
The green one. Cop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I like it.
Bye.